I'm Kennedy for Reason TV, and right now we're going to discuss the July issue of Reason Magazine with Reason Magazine Editor-in-Chief, Matt Welch. Welcome to your own office, Matt.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
So tell me about sex in the Arab world. It sounds naughty.
Well, we have this great author, Sherid El-Fekky, who has a new book out called Sex in the Citadel. She was a correspondent for The Economist, but also she was involved in HIV research. She went around the Arab region and interviewed people about their most intimate lives, their hopes, their dreams, their fears, and found a lot of interesting information that she shared with us at the Museum of Sex, fittingly enough, in New York. Mm. And so this is a transcript of the conversation that she had about how after the Arab Spring, people are starting very, very slowly to talk about sex in the Arab world.
And Mike Riggs has a great article, A Kinder, Gentler Drug Prohibition, which is about drug courts, supposedly a third way between the war on drugs and ending prohibition. So tell me about them.
Drug courts were seen as a way not to have everybody locked up in prison. So they're preferable to that, but they're not some kind of soft treatment centers that just help you out and then send you on your way. They can be incredibly restrictive. You have to go 2 times a week, you have to pass drug tests at odd hours of the night, and if you fail at any step, you are back in the criminal justice system. You can be back in jail or you can be in probation. What Riggs is pointing out is that this is still prohibition. No matter what you're doing, you still have the black market and all the ills that are associated with it, and it's still very punitive for people who are enmeshed into that system.
And it's indicative of the Obama way of dealing with the war on drugs, which is, you know, call addiction a disease, but at the same time still use police and SWAT.
Yes. Obama wants to say that he's not fighting the war on drugs only because he's not using the terminology war on drugs. But in fact, he has spending as much money on enforcement, doing more enforcement than George W. Bush on this. And no amount of diversion to drug courts can replace the fact that this is still prohibition and it's ruining people's lives.
And you had a great article about one of my favorite Bruins ever, Jackie Robinson, number 42, because of course there's a lot of attention because of the movie. You found an interesting book. You dug up a book from the early 60s that Jackie Robinson wrote. Are we watering down his legacy?
I think we are. This book called Baseball Has Done It was a great oral history talking about a lot of the players and executives of the previous 20 years, came out in 64. Jackie Robinson is widely portrayed as a kind of Martin Luther King figure. So for 2 years, he heroically endured all these just horrendous insults by white racists and fans and everything else. But what we forget is that that only lasted 2 years. Afterwards, he did not have to turn the other cheek anymore. And he was a competitive monster. This guy was a badass. He played 4 sports with incredible distinction at UCLA. He was a national high jump or long jump champion. He was a scoring leader in what was the Pac-10, or what was called the Pac-10 in basketball, all these things. He wanted to find a court in which you didn't have any advantage as a white person, and he was going to kick the snot out of you. And so I argue that once he was allowed to stop turning the other cheek, he actually, in that 5-year stretch, was the best baseball player on the planet. That's who he was, a viciously competitive, wonderfully competitive activist. He was much more Malcolm X than he was Martin Luther King. And if we're going to venerate the man so much, which we should, let's have the whole complicated character.
All right, well, you can read about Jackie Robinson, drug prohibition, and sex in the Citadel. All of it is in the July issue of Reason Magazine. Thank you, Matt.